It's Wednesday, June 4th, 2025, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today we're in Matthew chapter 14, looking at verses 22 through 33, with part one of the message titled, The Sustainer of Life.
He's on the holy mountain, continuing to intercede and pray. The imagery is beautiful, for we don't have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, he's able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through him, since he's doing what? He always lives to make intercession.
And now, here's Pastor Chris.
This morning, I invite you to turn to Matthew chapter 14 as we continue our study in the book of Matthew. What I've been trying to do is show you the connections here. And as last time, we looked at the connection between the two sort of feasts that Herod served up, one with the head of John the Baptist, and then Jesus feeding with his life, a life that sustains because of his death. He fed the multitudes, the 5,000. Well, what is the connection now between the feeding of the 5,000 and Jesus walking on the water? There's an important one. So we're going to read at verse 13 and then read to the end of the chapter. Our text is verses 22 through 36, found on page 975 in your Bibles. Let's give our attention this morning to the word of the Lord, beginning at verse 13. Now, when Jesus heard this, death of John the Baptist, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd and had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now, when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and the day is now over. Send the crowds away to go into the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." Then they said to him, "We have only 5 loaves here and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing. Then he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of the broken pieces left over, and those who ate were about 5,000 men besides women and children. Notice the connection. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up upon the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against it. And in the 4th watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." And when they had crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized him, they sent to all that region and brought to him all who were sick and implored him that they might only touch the fringe of his garment. As many as touched it were made well. And there we'll end this morning the reading of God's word. Well, at this point in Matthew, as we have been studying, there still remains confusion about who Jesus is. Who is Jesus is really an important question of this text. Who is this Jesus? And Matthew is revealing this through the book and its slow progression. It's similar to profession of faith in many ways that, you know, the Lord is so patient with us and brings us at different times and in different places through much patience to profess faith. And even after we've professed faith, there still is a lot of immaturity in us. And I think we see that here in Matthew. Matthew is determined to make it clear who Jesus is, but the disciples are struggling with that. And he's using many of the themes of the Old Testament. Obviously, Matthew is the most Jewish book of the four Gospels. He's using all the themes of the Old Testament to show us who this Jesus truly is. You remember at the beginning of the chapter, there was confusion on this point. This all runs together. There was confusion on this point, for Herod himself thought that Jesus was John the Baptist resurrected from the dead. Even Herod and the leaders, they had no idea really who Jesus was. But here's the problem. You'd be amazed to think that after all this time of walking with him and seeing the things that they've seen, raising of the dead, healing multitudes and multitudes of people of all their sicknesses, they still have not grasped this. We are sheep indeed. But what would be the sort of implication of loosely attaching ourselves with Jesus and not yet really knowing his identity? Well, that's where we are today. This is an important message in the Gospels. Really challenging us to think about who we are following, who we are aligned with. We left off last time. Jesus had just fed the multitudes, and you'll remember that something miraculous happened in the feeding of the multitudes. With just a few loaves and a few fish, he fed 5,000 people. It was a miracle. The bread and the fish, think about it, it just kept coming and coming to all these people, and 12 baskets of bread were taken up in excess. Now you remember what they had said to him. We don't have anything to feed these people. We don't have anything to feed these people. Just a few loaves and fish. And Jesus said, you feed them. You feed them. The disciples themselves had not yet eaten. But remember what Jesus said. He took the physical need of food and the physical need of eating to teach them something about his own life for them. He had already fed them with his word. And now that he was teaching them that he is the true bread that comes down from heaven, think of the great truth, to give life to the world. His body and his blood are life. We have to eat him. And that caused people a lot of trouble, didn't they? Didn't it? And that's why faith is so important. We eat by faith. Well, here's the 12 baskets sitting in front of them. Matthew wants to connect this. Immediately after this great event comes this next, a very important event in the life of our Lord. One we know because this frequently happens in the Gospels. There are multiple sort of boat sea incidents of Jesus' deliverance. The text we read today from Matthew chapter 14 is that immediately he made his disciples get in the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. There's no break here. There's a direct connection here. Matthew wants us to see that whatever is about to happen, these two events are connected, and they have the same meaning and the same purpose in revealing something about Jesus. Revealing something about his identity. Now, this is kind of deja vu, right? Back in chapter 8, remember we read the account and we preached this account. As they are in the boat, the evening came, a great storm came upon them. But at that time, remember, Jesus was with them. He was asleep in the bottom of the boat, and the great storm had come upon them, and again, they were terrified of the storm. Well, notice here, it's a little different. Matthew wants us to connect these storms and think about the difference. Immediately, he makes the disciples get in the boat, but he leaves them. And he goes up on a mountaintop by himself to pray. So the scene is purposeful. It's intentional in showing us, and it wants us to capture that crucial difference. But this time, he is alone. The disciples are alone on the boat, on the sea. Now keep in mind, whatever we're studying here, the Lord has an intentional purpose to train his disciples for the future. This is really important. The imagery here is somewhat powerful to think about. Jesus goes up on a mountain. Out in the midst of the sea are the disciples. Mark is a little more dramatic when he says the wind was against them, and the text uses a powerful word, they were beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. Straining is the word. It was a torment for them out on the sea. Now why this sort of scene? Why does the Bible keep showing us, the Gospels keep showing us this kind of scene? And the larger question, I think, for this text is why this time has Jesus departed from them? You remember in the first storm, as Jesus was in the boat sleeping, Jesus didn't just need a nap. He did this knowing, and he sent them into the storm, knowing that gale-force winds were coming upon them. He led them right into it. And that's why I've always said with these storm events, almost universally these things are preached, that Jesus will lead you out of the storms of this life. It's so cliche. Stop it. I'm tired of it. He leads you into the storms. And he makes you row for a while. And it's hard. It's fascinating the way that the Gospels describe this purposeful sort of connection, that Jesus is the one sending them into the storms, but this time, he's not there. Jesus knew and had determined the wind. He's in control of the wind. We had already seen that. They were amazed before when they said, remember when he calmed the storm, wow, even the winds and the sea obey him. The winds are obedient to him. We know from Mark, he saw them struggling. He looks out and sees them. And here Matthew is capturing now that he is up on the mountain praying while they're in the midst of this. I want you to put this together. He's up on a mountain with omniscient eyes, yes. He's able to look down and see his disciples rowing and struggling in the wind. The suggestion here is that Jesus had been, it's late into the night, up on the mountain about 6 or 7 hours praying while the disciples are struggling in the boat. The same verse says he went to them at the fourth watch of the night. So that's probably between 3 and 5 a.m. He sees them, and he doesn't come. It's always interesting when you study the Lazarus account. When Lazarus was sick, there's a little sort of ominous phrase there that they knew Jesus. When Jesus heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed there 2 more days. And so he said to Martha, I told you if you believed, you'd see the glory of God. But he stays behind. Now, the natural question that begins to sort of, I think, should be raised at this moment is, why did the Lord allow this? Why did the Lord permit this? Why did the Lord send this? I mean, he could have rescued them right from the start, but he didn't. Instead, he leaves them alone in the darkness, struggling in the wind. And I think the larger question that you have to ask in the middle of this text, first and foremost, is this. Are they alone? Are they alone? Are they alone in his absence? It's obvious Jesus is teaching them something. It's obvious Jesus is training something in their training that is very important for them. But I mean, the imagery here is watching and watching them strain and row, and he doesn't go until 3 a.m. This kind of gets to every sort of frustration we've ever had of the sense that the Lord doesn't answer us or doesn't come to us. What imagery? It's the constant questions of the psalmists raising the issue of storm. In their distress, they cried out and said, "The sea waves and billows roll over me. I cried out to God, 'Help, O God, how long?' Deep calls unto deep at the roar of your waterfalls. Waves and breakers have swept over me. My soul is in deep despair." Psalm 42 captures that beautifully. The common experience of God's people is the Psalm sort of 46, what we just sung out to the Lord that I picked. "The mountains are carried up into the midst of the sea. The waters roar with their foaming." And we never quite understand where the Lord is or what he's doing. And the picture that we have here is, while we are on the earth, struggling against sin and against difficulty and against death and opposition, what kind of opposition? He's on the holy mountain. And he's on that holy mountain now, continuing to intercede and pray. The imagery is beautiful, for we don't have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, he's able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through him, since he's doing what? He always lives to make intercession. That's what he lives to do. This is what he's doing for us. There's a promise in the covenant of grace, a promise that comes to us in the covenant of grace to his people. "I will never leave you nor forsake you." How's that possible? And I think that's where the focus of this passage, we first have to say that Jesus is really teaching his disciples about faith. Faith. How faith connects us to him. The benefit of the gift of faith and the benefits that flow from him, the head. And there we're beginning to see a tie to the previous section where he fed all these people from his own life, even when he was not physically present with them. Remember how the previous storm ended in Matthew 8? It ended with a question. And I think that's why the tie here is so important. It ended with a question. Here's the question that Matthew 8 ended with in the first storm, and it was this: what kind of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? What kind of man is this? Who are we with? Who are we following? What are we involved with? You have to remember, the sea to them was a place of the abyss. I mean, these are fishermen. These are, I've always loved to say, like, these are your, in our terms, rednecks. These are your rough ones. These are deadliest catch kind of guys. Tax collectors and fishermen. They don't get scared about much. The sea was the worst place for them in their whole history of understanding, it was a place of evil demons. It was a place of the abyss. It was a place of darkness. And that's what you see come out here. Don't you care? They said in the first one, don't you care that we're perishing? And he gets up out of the boat and with a word silences the whole thing. Which everyone should have said, which they did, who does that? I don't have the ability to silence much of anything. Well, here they are again. Here's deja vu, right? You know, storm after storm. But now he's not here. But he was praying. It's like J.B. Phillips, and some of these paraphrases are interesting, but don't resent trial as an intruder on his James translation, but welcome it as a friend. I can't help but hear the intercessory prayer of Jesus. Something like this must have been prayed. I do not pray that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. Here they are rowing in the darkness and in the sea, and waves are crashing, and Jesus is praying not to remove them. Jesus is praying not to take it away, but that they'd be kept. Now, Matthew is building to something. What is the climax, really, of the whole book of Matthew? It's the end of the book. Go, therefore. Go. Baptize the nation. And what was the promise in that? For lo, I am with you always to the close of the age. There's never a moment I'm not with you. How is that possible? You know Jesus prays for you. He doesn't pray for everyone. It's a remarkable thought. He does not pray for the world, he says in John 17. I don't pray for them. I pray for you. He prays, not a hair can fall from your head without his will.
Well, that's all the time that we have for you today here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We're glad that you joined us. We hope you'll join us next time for part two of this message in the book of Matthew. Until then, may the Lord bless you and keep you.